Hey everyone, welcome to season 3 of Tips Appreciated. As you probably noticed, we took a little bit of a break just to A, mentally recharge, but also mentally recharge. So episode 1, super exciting. We have David from Tokyo Fresh Podcast, where we talk about moving, working, and living in Japan for the past 5 years, dispelling the mystique of Japan, top food choices of visiting Japan, tips for tourists going to Japan, and of course, we can't forget his perspective on 7-Eleven. So hang tight. Here's episode 1 of season 3.
So welcome to the show, David, and happy to have you as a guest.
Thank you for having me on.
Of course. So I guess we could kind of talk about how we met or connected with each other. So we actually started talking with each other through Reddit because we were like a podcast guest.
There's a podcast like guest exchange looking for like people to come on or looking for people who have interesting like things or backgrounds. I don't know. They ask people for every kind of thing on there. So.
Yeah. So, you know, how talking on, you're not supposed to talk to strangers online. Yeah. So this was like a first experience for us. And it's been a good one, I would say. Like we met a lot of like great people online. So we didn't meet
anyone. That's good. I've never had to use it myself. So. Because I've been able to get people that I know to consistently like show up, and I'm like, okay, this guy's coming next week. This guy's coming next week.
Oh, so, that's so awesome! Yeah. Well, it's probably easier now too. Like meeting people, like doing everything online, like we are right now.
Everyone knows how to work Zoom now, so that's really helpful.
That's so true. But yeah, can you tell our listeners more about yourself and how you ended up in Japan?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in Gibbons. So that's like a small town outside of Edmonton. Then I went to university at the University of Alberta. I studied Japanese history, language, and like art. So like all my like major subjects were kind of centered around that. And then somehow ended up with a teaching degree that has nothing to do with Japanese. But so I did that, graduated in 2015, and then moved here, I think, the next year after.
Wow. So what made you, like, want to do, like, Japanese, like, learn Japanese?
So I have two older cousins who are more like brothers to me than actual cousins. And they both had also come here to Japan. Like the older brother went, he came back, then the younger brother went for like 7 years, and then he came back, and now I've gone. So I'm just waiting for my younger brother to show up, and I'm sure he'll be here soon.
Nice. But then when he comes back, are you coming back to
I don't think I'm coming back home.
Confirm, no.
Nope, not for me. I don't think so.
Wow. Okay. So then can you describe your experience and like teaching over there?
Oh man, how long you got? I don't know. For me, it's been good, but I mean, I can only speak for myself. Mm-hmm. It's, I think it's, if you're coming over as someone who's similar to me, who had a teaching degree, who taught in schools in Canada, you're going to have maybe a little bit of a tough time coming to grips with the fact that you're no longer the main teacher. Your job title is assistant language teacher. Assistant being the key word there, right? Mm-hmm. So you have no say over what's being taught, how it's being taught. So you kind of just have to let that part of being a teacher go.
Oh, wow. I thought they would kind of let you be the lead, especially.
That all depends on who you have as the Japanese counterpart. If they say like, you need to teach this way, like you kind of have no say because you're contracted by that school to be their employee. Yeah. So you can't exactly go to the principal and be like, hey, you know, well, this person said blah, 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 but I think this is better because technically you don't work for the school. So he's like, well, what do I care?
Yeah. Wow. So did you know that kind of going into it?
I knew that going in because my cousins both had gone and taught. So I kind of, you know, had secondhand information, but like other than that, not really. I've kind of just been see the pants teaching.
Wow. So when you when you landed in Japan, outside of sort of experiences from your cousin, last time we talked, you talked about some great tips like housing and all of those.
Yeah.
Like tell us about sort of those logistics.
So with housing, typically if you're in a good company, I stress this, if you're in a good company, they'll typically set you up with a house. But that house is probably garbage just because they have to set up 250 other teachers every single year, and trying to find you a house in a specific area that's close enough to a station so you can get to your school within a certain amount of like there's a lot of logistics that go around to finding you a house. So, you know, maybe you would have been okay with being farther away from your school and you could have got a better house, but you kind of just have to work with what they give you. But I think if you stay here for longer, you can be a little bit more picky about where you live afterward. Mm-hmm. I would say if you're coming here as a teacher, as a English language, like assistant teacher, kind of put up with the house that you get for a year. And then if you don't like it at the end of the year, maybe consider moving out, like save your money. I know a lot of teachers come over and they know that they're only going to spend 1 year, so they don't care. Because they're not going to see that house after a year. But if you're like me, who's going to stay for 2, 3, 5, 10 until I die, you know, kind of time frame, then it's probably behooves you to save some money in those first, you know, 1 or 2 years and kind of move up. So I used to live in what they call a 1K. So what that means is it is one room and the K is for kitchen. So that means the kitchen is in your bedroom.
Oh man, like a bachelor pad, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like smaller.
I bet you bachelor pads are like, I walk in there and be like, wow, this is like huge. Because like I could probably, from my bed, if I had like maybe a broom, I could touch the like heating element on my stove. Like it's that close. Whoa. It's small.
So and are
like
you
laying
like...
down? Yeah.
So are you in like a twin bed then or like
a I'm in a single. I wish I was in a twin bed.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, okay. I guess now I sleep on the floor. So like what's a bed? But
That's true. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's crazy then. But is housing like really expensive over there? Like even for that 1K, like is it like.
So pricey? I was paying Rokumang. So that's about. In Canadian dollars, it's about $700, I think, about $700 a month for that. And now I'm paying Nanamang, so that's probably like $7.50. But my house is like 4 times the size of what I was in before. So for about the same price, you know, it's not bad.
You sort of get smarter as you go.
Like yeah, as you basically.
Learn the environment, right? Yeah.
So then do you kind of recommend before people like... young people going over like to save a decent amount of money
Over there? I would say if you're staying for a year, just go nuts, right? Because, you know, save as much money as possible because you know that you only have a year. So you need to see what you need to see in that time period. And obviously, if you're going on a trip every other weekend, that's going to cost you some money.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're staying here for, you know, 5 years, it's like, yeah, you know, Mount Fuji is not going away. I'll see you later, right? It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So what was it like opening up like bank accounts, visas, paperwork, all that stuff, being in a whole different language?
The visas and paperwork is pretty easy because it specifically deals with immigration. So like typically there is an English form for most places, because when you're coming into Tokyo, and that's where most of the foreign residents who are coming from another country have to land. So they just know, okay, well, X amount of people are going to speak English. So we have to have some kind of way to accommodate that people. It'll just make our life easier. So that stuff is either usually done in your first year, your visa will be done by your company because your company has to set up all like how they're getting you a working visa and whatever. But then after that, you're kind of on your own. Some companies would be nice and they'll do the visa for you. My company is not, so I have to go to the hellhole that is immigration every single year.
Do you get to pick the company you go with, or you're kind of just stuck?
Yeah. The thing is, you can pick the company that you go with. The problem is typically you don't get to pick the school because you're a contracted like employee, so they just send you to wherever they have a spot to fill.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
So then when you went over, did you happen to like go to the school that your cousin was teaching at, or it was like,
oh no, he was my cousin was in Matsumoto, which is like way up in like central Japan, kind of in the mountains, and I'm in Yokohama right now, so pretty far away from where he is. But yeah, my other cousin taught in West Tokyo. So like I know where he was because I came to visit him in high school, but no, I'm like nowhere near any of that's like a completely different jurisdiction from where I'm at.
So then how many times did you actually visit it? Like Japan before you actually taught there?
So I went once in high school to visit my cousin, once in university to visit my then girlfriend who lived in Shizuoka, and then the third time was here till now.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah, so visiting like a tourist versus living there, there's certain mystiques of Japan, I guess. What about culture? Let's start with culture. I think that's the biggest one for me.
It's there's this weird thing that happens to me, and I talked to my friends, and they said that it happens too, is that when they visited, they always kind of knew like, oh, I'm on a trip, I'm going to go home. But there's like days where you would wake up and you'd be walking to work or school or whatever, and you kind of look around and you go, oh yeah, I'm in Japan. Like, what's going on? Because like you start to see like you get that influx of like language just kind of bashing you in the face all the time. So you're seeing Japanese, and you're like, oh yeah, right. Like I live in Japan. This is weird. There's that feeling for me. Even 5 years in, has not gone away.
Really,
it still feels like that. Like sometimes I'm walking down the street and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm here. It's strange.
Yeah, cool. What about like food and stuff, like as you like day to day breakfast, like lunch, dinner?
That I can keep pretty similar to what I had. Like I like for breakfast, I'll eat like cereal or something. Typically, I skip breakfast at my house. But when I'm going to work, I'll get go to like the convenience store and get onigiri or something.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
Take that to work and eat that. I kind of have like a ritual now where I get two onigiri, go to work, eat that in the morning, then do my stuff. Like,
okay,
don't talk to me before I've done it. And
so then if you do that like every day, does like the convenient people, like the people working there, recognize you? It's like, oh, yeah.
I mean, they probably do, but I think because I talk to them and interact with them in Japanese, they kind of don't know how to approach me. They're like, oh, should I speak to them in English if I know English, or should I speak to them in Japanese? Like, I don't know how good the Japanese is. Yeah. It's that's always a fun game to play. Like, should I, shouldn't I? I don't know.
They probably get like shy, like,
oh, yeah. What do you do? Usually just keep it to nods and then, hi, okay, hi, okay. Bag? Hi, yes, please. Okay, finished.
But then do they get like shocked when they hear you speaking like Japanese to them though? Like
I think if you lived other places, maybe, because I'm living in a place that just has a ton of foreigners. Like I think Japan's like racial breakdown is like 98% Japanese and then 2% foreigners. And that's foreigners from every country. Mm-hmm. But of that 2% of foreigners, like I think it's like 85-90% only live in three places, which is Osaka, Kyoto, Tokyo. So if you lived in like Sapporo or somewhere, people would be like, oh, like a foreigner, what's that, right? Like I see like maybe one every 2 years.
Wow.
Right. Okay.
I was going to say like, you know, I guess when you move in cohorts, like teaching to Japan, any like surprises running into locals, maybe not from Gibbons, but like Edmonton or
friends? It was funny because on my first meeting that we had with kind of everyone in my area for Yokohama, I sat down next to a dude and I introduced myself. I'm like, oh, I'm David. I'm from Canada or whatever. And he's like, oh, me too. He's like, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, I'm from Edmonton. He's like, oh, me too. I'm like, oh, that's weird. I've never met you in my life.
Well, it's kind of how like we met too. Yeah. Remember when you were asking me, he's like, oh, where do you live? Right. It's like, oh, yeah. Edmonton. It's like, what?
I was like, yeah, I was surprised by that. I was like, oh, okay, that's
like, because you're like, oh, Mountain Time. I'm familiar with Mountain Time. Where do you live? It's like, oh yeah, Edmonton. Yeah, small world. Like Gibbons, just like what, 20 minutes from
20 minutes? Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
just north.
Yeah, you touched on work a little bit like earlier. So as you build up seniority, I assume like being there longer, does the work curriculum change? Like in terms of you having a say? Or is it just more like you guiding the newbies coming in?
So here's kind of the weird thing. So like there is basically no seniority in this job. Like this is like a job where either you stay in this job forever and ever because you don't improve your language skills, your business skills or whatever. You stay in this job forever, or you get out within 3 to 5 years or even 1 year. That's typically why this job only offers you like 1 year contracts at a time, because people like to often just, okay, I'm done, I'm going to go at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. So typically there's no seniority unless you move up in the company to like a like managerial role.
I see.
But that's like really hard. Like you have to know Japanese. You have to be able to deal with your board of education. You have to do all this other stuff. Sell your company to the board of education, because they're the ones ultimately who are deciding what company they're going to hire for that school year to send all your teachers out. So like if my company doesn't win the contract for my area, I essentially have no job.
Interesting. Right. Yeah. The other thing is, I think we talked about last time, just the work culture there. I mean, from North America, we read about how hard the Japanese work. What's your observation?
So I would say that's partially true. Okay. You read a lot of stuff about like how, you know, Japanese people work super hard, and some of them do. Some of them will stay overtime for 4 or 5 hours every single day and just, you know, go nose to the grindstone, just do it. Mm-hmm. But then there's other times where the company will say, you have to be here till this, or you can't leave before the boss leaves. So then you have, you know, your coworker, Mr. Tanaka, walk into the photocopy machine with a blank sheet of paper to photocopy a blank sheet of paper. So he looks like he's doing work. But realistically, that guy's finished work like 2 hours ago, because why is he doing like 2 hours of overtime?
Yeah.
So it depends on your company. They call like companies that have that kind of work like environment black companies. They're like companies you don't want to be associated with, because they're just gonna, you know, kind of grind you up and spit you out.
Yeah. Do you think it happens in like bigger companies or more smaller companies?
I think in bigger companies it probably happens a little bit more. I wouldn't say something like something, a company like Sony wouldn't be like that, because it's big enough and it's global enough that they've kind of taken a lot more from Western cultures as well, because they kind of want to have parity between all their different regions, right? Like Sony Europe and Sony North America, they want to have kind of a similar thing. But a mid-tier Japanese company ran by a dude who's like 90 years old on his deathbed, and he's been doing it since the Edo period when the Shogun was still alive. Like, yeah, he's going to run it that way, because that's just what he knows, right?
He knows.
Yeah. And you know what? I've been actually reading like articles saying that there hasn't been new like couples getting married or anything, because a lot of people don't have time to date. And it's like, when I went to Japan, I think I was telling you last time how when I went to the arcades, I saw like businessmen just like playing games at like nighttime. But I'm like, oh, don't you want to go home and rest for the next day? But I guess maybe that's their stress reliever.
Yeah, it's that or alcohol, fortunately. Mm, yeah.
It's crazy. But like, speaking about alcohol, don't they like, if the boss wants to go out to drink, then they kind of have to go with him? Or
That is a very time tested like tradition. Like drinking alcohol or like going to an izakaya, which is like a Japanese style pub, is like pretty common in Japan. Like that's just kind of what you do. Mm-hmm. But I think on the one hand, people do it because they're, you know, they're humoring their boss. And then on the other hand, people are doing it because the boss is paying for all the alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah.
So really, you get your give and take.
You're like, all right, I guess. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So the last time I was in Japan, I think I was 6, and I've been wanting to go back, and I have a wife and 2 kids. So as a tourist view now, what would sort of be your recommendation? Obviously, is it like Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, like, you know, the big centers you're talking about?
I would say for me, I would say if you're coming over for a week, 2 weeks, you could spend a week or 2 weeks just in Tokyo. Like,
okay,
you don't even have to go anywhere else, just in Tokyo. I know a lot of people like to do this like weird thing where they're in Tokyo for 2 days and then they catch a Shinkansen to Osaka and then they're there for like a minute and then they go to Kyoto. Like, I understand why people want to do that, because they want to get the most out of their trip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's just way too breakneck. You know, when you're riding a bullet train every second day, Mm-hmm. You're gonna be dead by the time you get to Osaka.
Yeah, the first time I went to Japan, we spent a week in Tokyo, but the second time I went, I was like, okay, I don't really need to see Tokyo. I actually went to like Kyoto and Osaka instead. And I have to say, I think Osaka was my favorite out of like...
I like Osaka. Yeah. Other people that I know hate Osaka. So really? I think that's just some your mileage may vary thing.
I totally want to go there again because I think I spent like too little. Like I think I only spent 4 days and I didn't feel like that was enough.
Yeah, I've only ever been there for like maybe a week personally myself because I don't get out that far west. But yeah, I like Osaka.
Yeah.
I would recommend if you're coming, if you're coming, Osaka is good because it's also close to Kyoto. It's like maybe an hour train.
Okay.
You can hit both places pretty easily. And then if you really feel like you want to go to Tokyo, you can maybe get your like ticket back home out of Narita Airport in Tokyo. So you can spend your time there, bullet train to Tokyo for the last days and then leave that way rather than having to go back to Osaka.
Right. Is it cheap? Like essentially going... like train and stuff or
bullet train? I'm trying to remember.
It is now.
Okay.
Because nobody's riding it. So they're like, we're losing money. Oh, yeah. We gotta make it really cheap.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But I think before when like a lot of tourists are here, you'd probably spend like $200 to $300 one way.
Wow.
So it's essentially like a plane ticket like without taking a plane.
Totally.
But it's so smooth. And fast.
Yeah.
That is something that's a benefit because you actually get to look out the window and not just see the ground. You can see things.
Yeah, so you can see like small little towns as you're like going by. Yeah, it's so interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been like I think 5 years since I like last went. So yeah.
Yeah. Vic, you're into the food there, right?
Like oh yeah. The food is good. But
yeah.
David, tell us what are some hidden gems that tourists must try.
I actually made a list of things that you should probably try. Let me just go down my list. One of my favorites is kushikatsu. So that's an Osaka specific. Well, not specific, but it's more popular in Osaka. It's basically like you take meat or something that you've put on a stick, then you coat it in like batter, and then in the table there's just like a square thing of like oil. That you just dunk it in and let it cook in the oil and then pull it out and then you have like your condiments you can put on it. It's like making like a corn dog
at your table,
kind of.
That's so cool.
But it's like you can find everything. It's like wieners, daikon, you know, like if you can put batter on it and stick it in oil, you're good.
Well, that's kind of like fairs, like those like kind of like K-Days. Like
yeah.
The fair and they just deep fry everything, like deep fry Oreos and all that stuff.
It's very, very much like that. What else do I have on here? Ochazuke is another one I like. Ochazuke is like, it's rice with basically tea in it. I don't know if there might be like a similar Chinese or Korean dish. I'm not sure.
I've had something like that in Korea where you have your pot of like leftover rice and then they add tea and it kind of becomes like porridge after.
Yes. Yeah. It's very similar to that. So if you can go to a place that gives you nice ochazuke is good. I have yakitori and yakiniku written down here. So yakitori and yakiniku is like similar to Korean barbecue. If you've ever been to Korean barbecue, it's like the Japanese style of Korean barbecue. Gyoza, which is like, you can buy, it's like pot stickers.
That's the way you'd call them.
Yeah, pot stickers. They're extremely good. My recommendation is if you do come to Tokyo, make a trip down to Yokohama. It's like maybe an hour away by train and go to, Motomachi Chukagai is the like big Chinatown in Yokohama. And you'll get so much good Chinese food there. Like real authentic good Chinese food. Because it's basically everything in there is run by Chinese immigrants who live in Yokohama. So like it's all things that they've brought from China to Yokohama. So what else do I have? Gyukatsu and tonkatsu. So that's like it's like fried pork or beef like cutlet. Usually served on top of like grated cabbage. It's quite good. You can get it. It's like a pretty common food. You can get it kind of at, there's like shops that are kind of like chains, like a McDonald's type thing.
Is that the one where, I think I had that, where a person comes with a basket with like shredded cabbage. If you run out, they give you
more? They'll usually
that get was really good.
Free because cabbage is, you know, like 10 yen to buy cabbage.
Yeah, they just come back. They come with their little wooden bathroom. They're like, more? It's like, yes.
Yep.
I want more.
Yeah. I love going to Geekatsu. I don't go a lot, but when I do, I usually go to like a place that specializes in it because it's significantly better than the fast food ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okonomiyaki is good. So it's like Japanese, like pancake. I hesitate to call it a pancake. It's not quite a pancake, but it's like a savory pancake. So on the top, you'll usually have like pork or like bacon strips or something. And then underneath is like a batter of corn, cabbage, and then like a kind of a pancake mix. Mm-hmm. You put sauce over top of it and it's great. That's also from Osaka. So there you go. There's more stuff. Nice. But there's like multiple styles of it too. You have Hiroshima style, Osaka style, and then Tokyo style. Don't get Tokyo style. I hate it. It's bad.
Okay. Yeah.
But Tokyo has like a similar thing called monjayaki, which is using, it's like mochi. So it's like bashed, what is it? Bashed rice. It's like, I don't know how they make it, but it looks like puke. If you want to stop the podcast right now, Google monjayaki.
Okay.
You'll just see a picture that looks like puke, like someone like threw up on a hot plate, but it tastes great.
Okay, you know what kind of looks like puke? Okay, what's your take on natto?
I hate natto.
Okay, so bad. I tried natto when I was in Japan because I was like, okay, yeah. I got to try it. Must be good, right? Do you know what natto is, Eddie?
I don't. I was going to ask.
It's like fermented soybean, but you like mix it. Right, you're supposed to eat it with like hot rice, right?
Yeah, you can eat it hot rice. People like to eat it on toast as well.
Yeah, so when you mix it, it becomes like slimy. Right, and like
it's so it's like gross. It's like imagine you bought like Heinz beans, but then replaced all the like tomato sauce with like Elmer's glue.
No,
yeah, it's like slimy. I'm just like what? Because I was like, okay, I'm gonna give it
absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'll give it a chance, right? Like I gotta try it when I'm in Japan, and yeah, I was not a fan.
The smell is bad. The taste is bad. The texture is awful.
Yeah.
I assume that this is kind of like a cultural holdover where like after World War II, you would eat kind of whatever you could because everything was destroyed, right? Mm-hmm. And natto is like super easy to make. It's really nutritious. It's good for you. So that's why like all the old people now really like natto because they ate it when they were kids because that's all they really had.
Yeah, yeah.
Like young people I talk to, it's like, oh, natto's kind of disgusting. Like, I don't want to eat that. It's gross. Like, I can eat anything else, literally anything else, and I'll be happy.
Okay. I thought it was just me. I was just like,
no, it's definitely not just me.
Because my friend didn't want to try it, but I was like, oh, no, I got to try it. But yeah, I was like, oh, no.
Okay, yeah.
What did your friend think, Vic?
No, she didn't want to try it.
She
didn't want to try it. She's just like, okay, that looks gross. Because I knew you had to mix it to get that slimy consistency. Right. And then I was like, oh, okay, this not a fan.
Yeah, it's not. I've definitely made the mistake before not being careful enough at like conveyor belt sushi. Because sometimes they'll have like the rolls that have salmon, but they'll also have rolls that have natto. When you mash it up like that to get it into a maki, it looks exactly the same. So I wasn't paying attention. So I pulled it off the thing and just like shoved it in my mouth. And I'm like, this is not fish. What is this?
Oh, no, that's the worst.
Jeez. Okay. So on my bucket list that Vic talks a lot about is food from 7-Eleven.
Okay. I am a purveyor of 7-Eleven.
Are you?
Okay. So it's the only convenience store close to my house. No, like I think in Japan, convenience store food is actually pretty good. Like, you know, they call it a convenience store, but in North America, none of that is like really convenient.
Yeah, yeah.
But here, a convenience store is actually convenient.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can get way more than just like food or snacks at the convenience store. Like you can buy like shirts, underwear, socks, like deodorant, pencils and paper, alcohol.
Yeah,
like, I think whatever you need is just there.
Yeah, like I had to go to a Watson, right, to purchase museum tickets to Doraemon.
Right? Okay. So you can do at like 7-Eleven or Lawson and Family Mart. You can buy like concert tickets just at the register. The only problem is that Japan runs on a lottery system, so you might buy the tickets and then not get them.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's weird. So you like buy like a reservation for like a lottery, and then they'll run the lottery because more people will want to buy the tickets than they can fit in Tokyo Dome or wherever they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So you have to wait to find out if the ticket you bought you actually even have. Mm-hmm. It depends on the show. If it's popular enough, that'll happen. If no one's going, then no problem. But
yeah. Okay, so going back to 7-Eleven, what's your number one thing to get there?
My number one thing to get there, typically for me, I will usually buy, they have like a like pork katsu like sandwich.
Oh, I've heard
it's
about
really those. Good. Yeah, it's yeah. really good. Like it's cheap, it's good. It's not the best, you know, pork katsu sandwich I've had, but you know, if I'm just like coming home and I'm a little bit hungry, I'll, you know, drop in a 7-Eleven. I don't know. I have like a weird ranking for convenience stores, like which one has the best this, which one has the best that.
Okay, what's your ranking then? Tell
us. So in my opinion, if we're going to rank all three of them, it goes Family Mart, 7-Eleven, Lawson, and then whatever else, like Daily Yamazaki, but I don't see those anymore. Yeah, around. But yeah, like Family Mart is just kind of a really good, kind of just everything. And I prefer their onigiri to however they make it 7-Eleven, but 7-Eleven has like better actual like meal food. Mm-hmm. If you want to buy like a bento or like, you know, like ramen or something, I would go to 7-Eleven every single time. Mm-hmm. But Family Mart, you know, like they're similar, they're better at some things and worse than others, but I would put Family Mart maybe just a little bit higher.
Nice. What about, like, you talked about cereal earlier, so I'm gonna like, what's your cereal of choice? I gotta ask.
My cereal of choice is the only cereal that exists in Japan, and that's cereal.
Oh, that's cereal?
Just plain cereal? Yeah.
It's like, you can like get Cheerios? So it's, no, it's like granola.
Granola.
And then there's like 8 different versions of granola. It's like okay. granola with strawberry, granola with blueberry, granola with you know, well, like whatever. Yeah. But it's all the same thing.
But just like different brands too?
No, it's the same brand. They just have 8 different styles of granola. I don't know why, wow. but they do.
All right. So it's not like a cereal aisle in like a supermarket here.
Like you can get like Frosted Flakes or something. But the problem is like they're so expensive. Like I'm paying for like to buy an 800 gram bag of Frosted Flakes cost me like 1,000 yen, which is like 10 or more bucks.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not paying 10 bucks for Frosted Flakes. I mean, it's corn. Like, come on. Like, it's not that expensive.
Yeah, granola it is. With strawberry or...
Yeah. So it's kind of... It's been what I've been reduced to.
Yeah.
Okay, so since you've been in Japan for 5 years, you said, right?
Yeah, five. This year's 5.
What do you miss most in Canada, like food-wise, that you would love to have in Japan?
That's a good question. I'm going to say basically nothing, to be honest.
Nothing?
Really?
Because the food here is just so good. Mm-hmm. There is one thing that I... No, two things. There's two things I miss, and they go together well, and that's probably why I miss them. It's raspberry jam and peanut butter.
Peanut butter? Oh. They don't have peanut butter over there?
No, they have peanuts cream. So peanuts cream is like if you took peanut butter and removed all the peanuts and then just added like metric tons of sugar.
Oh.
And then made it like a whipped cream and then had the gall to call it peanut butter.
Oh, weird.
It's terrible. It's like, yeah, it is like eating peanut flavored whipped cream. It's awful.
Wow. They do like their like desserts. It's like kind of like their Japanese pancakes. So it's like fluffy. It's
like
normal pancakes, but it's like the big souffle one.
Yeah. You can, however they make it, they add like, baking soda or something to make it like really super poofy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. That is one thing here that is really good though, is like dessert. I don't know why. Like Japanese people just love dessert and like big dessert.
Okay. What's your take on Japanese cheesecake then?
What's it called? There's like a specific name for it. It's like raw cheesecake. What? Blue cheese? I forget what it's called. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
I prefer real cheesecake. Yeah. But it's okay.
Because people raved about like Uncle Tetsu and all that stuff. And you could get it now in Canada. Yeah. I think there's Uncle Tetsu and then there's another famous one in Japan as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wasn't a huge fan. Like maybe because we're used to. Yeah, it reminds me of like a fluffy cake, not a cheese.
Give me fat. That's yeah. what I want.
Yeah. Give me the substance.
Yeah. Nice. I don't know. For like, for me, if I want to get something in Japan that's like a snack that's like wholly Japanese, I would rather go get like taiyaki or something. So taiyaki.
Oh, like the fish? Like the fish shape. Right? Yeah. That's
really I would nice. Rather go get that than cheesecake or like a parfait or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I was really good was crepes.
Yes, super there's good. A lot of crepes there's good. A lot of plates that play a lot of places that make crepes.
Yeah,
I see a lot of I think it's just because they're kind of like easy to make if you have the like equipment to do it. There's a lot of like stalls, like drive around kind of pop up shop places. They'll just like drive their van to a supermarket and then just stick out front and sell crepes out the truck. They're like everywhere. I see them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Eddie hasn't been to Japan with his family. What are some tips you would like provide to him, like coming with like a group?
How old are your kids, Eddie?
10 and almost 8. So we're planning to go.
Oh
maybe
man,
next
that's
year.
Like that's like perfect age.
Is it?
To be honest, yeah.
Okay,
like,
we were wondering what age
your kids are old enough where they're not going to be, you know. It's less you're going to have to drag them around. Yeah. Like they're able to do their own thing and like move by themselves. Mm-hmm. One thing I would recommend, and I think I would recommend this for every single person who comes to Japan, get at the first like train station you go to, get a Suica or I forget
Pasmo?
What it's called. Pasmo. Pasmo and Suica. And they get one of those cards because having to go and buy a ticket every single time is a waste of your time. And there's no point in you doing it. Just get that ticket, drop like $100 on your card, and then you'll probably never have to go back to the machine for like a week and a half.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And you could use that card at convenience stores too to pay for
stuff. Yeah. So like recently they've changed a lot of that. You can just if you go up to the counter at a convenience store and you just say IC. I want to use my IC card.
Okay.
And they'll be, okay, and then they press a button and then you scan it on the thing and there you pay. You're done.
Really?
Yeah, it's so like it's touch like, debit, basically.
It's more, yeah, I was going to say, it's like transportation and debit, too.
Yeah, because I think they have that in Hong Kong. I think I use that with the Octopus Pass. So it's kind of like a cash pass or whatever. Okay. So you could use it to pay for stuff.
Yeah.
It's really weird that they're like that's so common. And then Japanese banks like haven't figured out how credit cards work for like.
Really?
Yeah. Or like how does online banking work? It's like you can get all this like insanely complicated train system to run down to the minute and use this card for stuff, but you can't figure out online banking. Like, what are you doing?
Oh wow, that's so interesting since they're like so high tech.
I still have to go like get paper money from an ATM because I can't do online banking to like transfer something to a card.
Wow So you still that's walk into so a bank basically.
Yeah, yep,
do that
every time I need money. I have to walk to a bank.
That's okay. Interesting.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah, I would have thought it'd be pretty streamlined.
You would think. Yeah, they've started to introduce stuff. There's like a PayPay thing. This called PayPay, and you can like put it on your Apple Watch and scan it the same way you would the IC card. But that's basically the same system.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. One more question about your work-wise. So, say there's like students that are like finishing up school, like pretty soon here. Would you suggest for them to come to Japan to teach English, or you're like, no, stay away? It's not that
well.
Fun.
Okay, so there's a few caveats here. One is you have to have a degree, regardless. So, like, if you're finishing university, it doesn't matter what degree you have, but you have to have a degree, and it has to be like from a university specifically. They're like weirdly specific about that, like no college, it has to be from a university, like a bachelor's or whatever.
Okay,
if you are coming, at least study some Japanese. Like, don't come over here like with nothing, because you're gonna be so lost and you're gonna probably hate your life. And if you are someone who wants to come to Japan and work, I think you should, but understand that you are coming here to work. It is not a vacation. I think a lot of people who get burned out and go home after a year despite liking Japan, the reason is because they treated the year one like a vacation. And then the second year comes around, they realize like, no, I'm not, like, I can't go back to this magical wonderland for the year that I had, because now it's just I work here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's actually like good to know. Like it's not like a party year kind of.
Yeah,
thing. Like,
some people definitely treat it like a party year. Yeah. And those are the people who go home after a year typically. Like the people that I know that have stayed here a long time have taken it as this is my life. This is a job. It's not a vacation. I don't have a set time limit other than my contract or whatever, but I can renew that. So
interesting.
No, yeah. That's actually a really good like info.
Yeah.
Like, for people that want to do like anywhere, I guess, like not just Japan.
Yeah.
Just
Japan.
I think that's, that is, you know, if you're coming also be ready to just kind of acquiesce to what people ask you to do. If you're an assistant language teacher, if you're in a different job, I can't really help you because I don't know about whatever you're doing. But, you know, the work culture is different. There's going to be things that you have to do at work and you go, why are you doing this way? And just you're going to have to roll with that. Like whether you think that there's a better way to do it, an easier way to do it, you know, like you just have to put up with the fact that that's the way things are done sometimes and kind of move on with your life, even if you hate it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then would you suggest people to kind of learn about the culture and stuff too, to kind of get a grasp of it?
I think
like before I went to Japan, I kind of thought, you know, just watching like anime and all this stuff, like, oh, okay, maybe it's kind of like this. But then actually going there, it's like obviously different.
Yeah. It's, I think that's something that's pretty hard to gauge because one, all workplaces aren't the same. Mm-hmm. And two is that it's hard to do research. Like I don't know how you would do research on something like that. Like, you know, you can go watch a YouTube video that says Japanese work culture is like this, but then you get your company, you're like, no, it's not like this at all. That was because this one person worked at this one company that shaped their view this way.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard to kind of put that into a crystallized, you know, here's the advice that I give you. But I would say just kind of be ready to work longer than you think you have to work. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometimes maybe less than you think you have to, depending on where you work. Because sometimes there's days where I sit at my desk and I do absolutely nothing. And that's just because I don't have work that day. So, you know, it happens.
Right.
Okay. No, that's good. Okay. So, David, you have a podcast called Tokyo Fresh.
Yes.
Want to talk more about that?
Sure. Yeah. How to approach talking about this podcast? Because, man, I would say, let me put it to you this way. If you are interested in coming to Japan and you want a more realistic slant on what it's like to live here and what it's like to do stuff, then I would check it out. Now, keep in mind that this is a very not safe for work podcast, so please don't listen to it with your loudspeakers on because you'll get in trouble for sure. But yeah, I think a lot of content creators in Japan give you this kind of like very puffed up version of Japan. Like, this is so great. I love this. And then you come to Japan, you're like, Japan's nothing like this. What happened? Like,
yeah,
it's because this person gets paid to advertise the things that you won't ever see because, you know, that's not how things work. So, you know, if you're looking for a little bit more of a realistic slant, I would say give it a listen. The first episodes are kind of more down to earth, but, you know, after episode 20, we just went off the rails at this point.
Well, I'm looking at your episode list here. Talking to a professional Pokemon animator.
Yes, yeah.
That's probably the most safe for work one that I could kind of...
Maybe.
I think so, yeah, probably.
Probably?
Probably. Well, yeah. Yeah, recently, yes. I would say recently, yes. Yeah. That's probably the most...
How did you get into contact with someone that like does like Pokemon animation?
So he just sent a message to my friend over Instagram. And he's like, hey, can I come on your podcast? And we're like, okay, well, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm an animator for Pokemon. And we're like, what are you doing next week? Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it.
Wow, that's awesome.
That is great.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
You talk about cereal too. Cereal, masturbation, and Bible hente?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the not safe for work titles.
No? Okay.
let me explain. So like the titles of the episodes are usually typically just like a 1 minute like microcosm of like something we said in the episode. So for example, the episode called Serial Masturbation, my friend brought up the fact that Kellogg's, the guy who makes the cereal, the original creator, he had made the cereal with the intention that it would stop people from masturbating because it was like super bland and it would like take away their sexual desire or something.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like, you know, that's not the entire episode, but it's just like, okay, what, like, what is this? Now I have to listen.
Hey man, Eddie was intrigued just now. He's just like, what is this?
Yeah. I was admiring the cover art, and then I saw the serial masturbation, Pokemon, and Bible Hentai. I'm like, I have to ask. But we don't have to ask. You can actually go and listen to it. So there you go.
Yes, have a listen. But yeah, thanks for coming on our podcast, David.
Of course, anytime.
Yes, this world is
maybe we could do another episode. Maybe we could talk more about cities and like their food.
Sure. Yeah, of course. I would love to do that. I like cooking and stuff and Japanese food, so I'm super down for that.
Awesome. Yes. Okay, that will be our second episode together.
Okay, sounds great.
So yeah, thanks so much, David.
You're welcome.